Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, July 7th. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here. Max Armstrong will be joining me a little bit later to talk markets with Jim McCormick of Allendale. But in the meantime, we'll begin our report as always by taking a look at Wall Street, because there is a connection between Wall Street and the commodity market. Very often, the commodity market is impacted by what happens on Wall Street. So today, Wall Street stocks closed on a high note, the S&P 500 index posting its best gain in six sessions on the heels of a U.S. payrolls report that gave investors more confidence in the strength of the U.S. economy. We'll take a look at that jobs report that was issued today a little bit earlier. But at the end of the day, the Dow Industrial Average was up 94 points, ending at 21,414. The S&P 500 gained 15 points to end the week at 2425, and the NASDAQ composite added 63 points, up more than 1% to 6153. The technology sector, up 1.25%, led the charge higher, helped by gains of more than 1% in market cap heavyweights like Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook. And despite slumping nearly 3% last week, the tech sector is up more than 17% on the year, and that is the best performance of the 11 major S&P groups. With the Fed now expected to remain on track for a rate hike later this year, financials up a little more than 0.5% also advanced as they benefit from a steepening of the yield curve. One of the stocks gaining attention today, Tesla, up 1.5% after the luxury electric car makers said that about 3,500 vehicles were in transit to customers at the end of the second quarter, and they would be counted as deliveries in the third quarter. So that's what happened on Wall Street. And for the week, the Dow rose 0.3%. The S&P 500 rose only 0.007%. The NASDAQ rose 0.25% for the week. So performance on the stock market, more positive than negative, certainly, although there were some negative down days during the trading week. As we look ahead to next week, the Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen will make her semi-annual visit to Capitol Hill and will deliver her monetary policy testimony before the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday and Thursday. Yellen's testimony will cover recent policy and the state of the economy, but she's likely to be quizzed as well about the Fed's upcoming plan to shrink its asset holdings, the Trump administration, and other issues before the sometimes combative House Financial Services panel. Now, on the corporate earnings side, investors will be looking at some key earnings reports due out on Friday from big U.S. banks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup. J.P. Morgan and Citigroup executives are likely to be asked if their recent credit card investments are paying off and whether they see an end to the rebound in capital markets trading that began a year earlier. Separately, well, Wells Fargo likely to get more questions about regaining momentum in the consumer businesses following last year's sales scandal, as well as progress with branch closures. Meanwhile, PNC Financial Services Group and First Horizon National Corporation will also report their second quarter results on the same day. So Friday going to be a busy earnings report day for the banking industry. Other corporate earnings expected next week. PepsiCo expected to report second quarter results on Tuesday. The beverage maker warned in April that margins will remain under pressure in the second quarter due to higher commodity costs. And then we take a look at the Bank of Canada, because it will release its interest rates policy decision on Wednesday. It's largely expected to hold rates steady at 0.5%. After years of ultra-low rates and just months after saying cuts were still on the table, the bank has said in recent weeks that the pair of 2015 reductions had done their job in cushioning the Canadian economy from plummeting prices for oil, which is a major export. Once again, we're going to see a bevy of regional presidents of the Federal Reserve Bank making speaking appearances across the country. And that has become sort of a normal thing this time of the year for the presidents of the regional Federal Reserve banks. Delta Airlines, the number two U.S. airline by passenger traffic, expected to report earnings for the second quarter on Tuesday, and they should be helped by improving average fares and slower capacity growth. And so investors will be watching that to get a feeling on the state of the travel economy. And then next week, a trial is beginning on Monday in a lawsuit against General Motors, claiming that a faulty ignition switch caused a power failure that led to an accident. The case was chosen as a bellwether or a test case out of more than 200 similar cases consolidated in Manhattan federal court. That case will be taking place before U.S. District Judge Jesse Furman in Manhattan. And U.S. consumer credit figures expected to show a reading of $11.9 billion for May, compared with $8.20 billion in April. And the two biggest airplane manufacturers made news this week. Today, Boeing announced that it delivered 183 jetliners in the second quarter, down from 199 a year earlier. The company delivered 123 of its single-aisle 737s in the latest quarter. That's down 4 planes from the same period a year ago. And deliveries of the 787 Dreamliner, my goodness, the problems that Boeing had with that for years. Well, deliveries fell to 33 787 Dreamliner airplanes in the 3 months ended in June, and that's down 5 from a year ago. Boeing also said today it booked total orders of 212 aircraft in the second quarter. Now, the big competitor for Boeing, Airbus, had quite an announcement. It signed an agreement to sell 140 aircraft to China in a deal worth almost $23 billion at list prices. And that list price number is always one to look at, because there are discounts generally in those purchase agreements. The agreement signed during a visit by the Chinese president to Germany is for 100 A320 family aircraft and 40 A350 planes. The Airbus Group chief executive Tom Ender said, "One of the biggest deals that we have signed in a long time." So that news from the two big airplane makers in the activity that took place this week. Now, for those of you that like to follow Warren Buffett and perhaps shadow his moves in the market, better start taking a look at utilities. Because Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway said today it would pay $9 billion to pick up the parent of Texas Power Transmission Company, Oncor Electric Delivery Company, from bankruptcy, stepping up its pursuit of steady returns in utilities. If the all-cash deal is approved by a bankruptcy judge and Texas regulators, it will hand Berkshire ownership of one of the largest U.S. electricity transmission companies. Texas regulators shot down two previous deals to sell Oncor to other companies. So that's what Mr. Buffett is doing, in case you want to follow. And then just a little more on the jobs report this morning. Non-farm payrolls jumped by 222,000 last month. Economists were expecting a gain of 179,000, and data for April and May was revised to show 47,000 more jobs created than previously reported. So once again, the economy showing strength in hiring. Construction added another 16,000 jobs last month. Healthcare employment jumped by 59,100, while the professional and business services sector created 35,000 jobs. Retailers hired 8,100 workers, a surprise for a sector which had been losing jobs for four straight months. Well, coming up, we'll talk about commodity markets in the world of agriculture. Max Armstrong standing by with a guest when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Throughout the year, we turn to the analysts at Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, for their expertise on market activity in the world of agriculture. That's who is sitting down with Max Armstrong this week here on the markets.
That USDA report, that acreage report, that combination acreage and stocks report lived up to its reputation, didn't it, as a fire starter for the market. Generally, we see a lot of volatility coming out of that report, and this year was no exception.
That is correct, Max. We had a very wild report. The trade kind of caught a little bit flat-footed. I mean, they were looking for the bean number to be quite a bit bigger than 90 million, I believe, and they didn't get it. And then for the farmer to plant a million more acres of corn, that definitely was a surprise. I guess the axiom of farmers like to plant corn was true, and they did it. But really caught the market, I think, more than anything, was the reaction. Because the numbers really weren't earth-shattering, but we rallied dramatically. And the big thing, it caught the funds. That's the big thing, I think, that caused that massive reaction on Friday, was the funds are caught short. They were not looking for a bullish reaction or a bullish report. They got caught, and here we go. We're off to the races.
The funds were heavily short, too, were they not?
Correct. In the bean contracts, they were record biggest short they've ever carried, over about 120,000 contracts. So when that bean report wasn't as bearish as they were projecting, it forced their hand, and they've made a run for the exit. Now, the last couple of days, that rally's continued, but they're still estimated to be short about 60,000 contracts of beans. So if they want out, we've got more upward potential to go.
All right, with that report in the rearview mirror, as we look ahead here, weather seems to be the talk, and that is always the case when you get into the early days of July. But we have at least one very strategic dry pocket right now, don't we?
Yes, the Northern Plains is where the weather is the key right now. The spring wheat is definitely struggling. The crop ratings continue to decline. But a lot of people forget, we grow a lot of corn and beans in that part of the country. Roughly 10% of our corn is produced in that part of the country, as well as about 13, 14% of the beans. So this dry weather we're seeing is shrinking the crop. And what the trade's watching very closely is any signs of that extreme heat that's sitting over the Dakotas might migrate over to the I states and put a drag on those states' yields.
I understand a little bit of Iowa already is dry. Northwest Iowa, southwest Minnesota, I think there's been some concern. And you'll find pockets elsewhere. I know some farmers in Champaign County, Illinois, who said they sure would like to have a rain brought their way.
Yeah, there is pockets pretty much across central Illinois, kind of diagonal across the northwest part of Iowa to the southeast. They're dry. They need some rain. The maps are calling for that part of the country to get rain last week, and it did not materialize. Right now, their maps are trying to hint some of that rain back in there. But yeah, we need some rain there because we're coming to that critical period of pollination. Our calculations at Allendale suggest that about half this crop will be pollinating right about third week of July, right around July 20th to be exact. And we need the lower temps and a little bit of rain to hit the maximum yield potential.
Is this problem exacerbated at all, Jim, by the fact that we had a ragged start to this season in quite a bit of the Corn Belt? By ragged, I mean the challenge of planting, the difficulty of planting in a timely manner, the need to replant, the fact that when you look at some of these fields, the crops out there are pretty short. And again, I'm talking, you know, basically that 3I League region.
Yeah, I mean, what's really... It's critical that these areas have a good yield or pollination because, like you said, they are off to a rough start. A lot of my customers in the Eastern Corn Belt, they think trend yield is at best they can achieve. The idea of above trend yields, they just don't think it's there. Too ragged. They worry about nitrogen problems, leaching late in the year. So the market's going to kind of count on the Western Corn Belt, Iowa specifically, and Minnesota to kind of maybe offset the lower yields in the East. And if Iowa kind of misses out on some rains and the heat builds into it, we are going to see the yield drag and the market's going to get caught flat-footed potentially.
Where are you on your corn yield ideas? What are you thinking about? Are we down into the low 160 range yet?
I don't think we're in a 160 range right now. I'd say it's closer to around a 168 level, a little bit below trend, maybe 165. Our key thing is the temps during the pollination. That is what I like to track. Historically, we have found when you're running 2 to 5 degrees above normal temps during pollination, that's when you're going to see the yield drag. So the next 3 weeks, it's going to be critical. If we warm up, that yield's going to go down, I believe.
So we really need to take a look at that time frame, what, around July 20?
July 20th. Pretty much that is when a bulk of the country we're calculating is going to be hit that 50% pollination mark. So those are the heat numbers. So when we're looking out 8 to 15 days, and the longer range maps are hinting the heat out there in the 8 to 15-day maps, if that comes to fruition, look out. I think you're going to see the market rally.
How hard will it be for the soybean market to get excited about weather challenges in July, knowing, as we've seen so many times in the past, that a good, solid August front coming through, or maybe even a little tropical moisture dumped in, and there's talk about the possibility of the tropics firing up some activity along in August. You know, we know how much of a difference that can make in the bean yield.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the beans probably won't lead us on the way up. It'll be the corn that leads us the next couple weeks if we turn hot and dry, Max. But what'll happen is the beans will go up. That old line of, you know, rising tides lift all boats. If the funds are buying the wheat based on the drought in the Dakotas, they're buying corn based on, you know, dryness issues potentially in the Midwest. The bean market's going to follow it up also just on sympathy. But like you said, August is going to make or break the beans. We've found customers say, wow, the beans look bad on August 1, and by August 15th, they're shocked at how well the crop looks with one good soaking rain.
At times in the past when we've seen these weather concerns in the market, we've seen overseas buyers getting concerned, and they say, we don't want to get caught flat-footed here. We don't want to get caught without booked supplies. Is there the possibility that we might start to see some of that buying on the basis that we could have a whole different balance sheet?
I think it's something we need to keep an eye on. I don't think they're quite there yet. They feel pretty comfortable, I believe. Brazil's harvesting their second crop. It's a monster crop. Actually, Brazil-Argentina corn crop combined is about 1.6 billion bushels bigger than last year. They're also, you know, in the midst of finishing up a harvest of a record bean crop. So I think the world traders right now feel there's comfortable supplies in the world just yet. But they're going to, you know, they got to be cognizant. It's amazing. Look what the Minneapolis wheat did. I mean, 3 weeks ago, we were dry in the Minneapolis wheat. It wasn't like this drought just came on. It's been a drier bias, but the market exploded when all of a sudden the market kind of panicked. And that could happen at any time. So I don't think they're doing it yet, but it's something we need to keep an eye on, you know, if the maps start to turn hot and dry.
Is there anything left to the upside yet in that spring wheat market?
Oh, yeah, I think there is. That model's continued to be hot and dry. I think, you know, we can have a dollar. You know, we've had spring wheat get up to $10 before on a squeeze play as the people kind of panic. So, yeah, I think you've got to, you know, trying to pick a top in that market is very dangerous, plain and simple. But it looks like there's still some upward potential.
Speaking of how quickly things change, isn't it amazing how the sentiment about wheat, and we've talked about this on our broadcast many times, how it goes from a situation of burdensome surpluses to a point where, oh, my goodness, we're wondering about available supplies. It can swing quickly.
It can swing very, very quickly. Like you said, we had a burdensome supply just a year ago. Now we're talking about drawing down on stocks. The prices are getting people attractive. I've had a lot of customers call me just in the last 24 hours saying, hey, what about marketing 2018 wheat already. So it looks like this run-up in wheat's definitely got the producers' attention looking out a year out already.
I saw one economic assessment this week that it would be tough for that that wheat price, taking a look at the hard red winter wheat, for that price to get up above, much above $6, the feeling being that there is just so much wheat yet available from other producing regions of the world.
Well, that's it. What will happen is we're going to get a move up, and it may get $8, it may hit $10, but if you look historically, when it gets there, it's there for maybe an hour or two, and then it collapses on itself. The one thing about the spring wheat we're finding interesting is we've had several customers that are telling us, hey, you know, this year's crop's really kind of disappointing, but I have last year's crop. We have a couple customers that have 2 years of wheat sitting in their storage. They've been waiting for this payday, and now they're you know, we're encouraging them, hey, you've been waiting for it. It worked out. Take advantage of it and move it. So, yes, there is wheat in the world. You know, we've got a decent soft red wheat coming out in the Midwest. The hard red wheat out of Kansas has been a decent crop. So there is not a shortage of wheat. So we got to keep an eye on that also.
That farmer's grain bins, they certainly paid their way in this particular instance, didn't they? And I've heard the protein still really is crucial. I mean, that the millers, they're going to have to come up with the price to get the protein that they want, the protein they've been accustomed to.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. The protein has been the big discussion point, not there. If you are a producer and you have good protein, you're in the driver's seat right now because it is definitely a shortage of the protein content right now.
A farmer is always going to look at what's going on, especially with experiences of the past, and say, oh, I don't want to miss the train. I don't want to miss the opportunity. Obviously, I want to sell at the best price that I can. Do you have that conversation often?
I have that a lot, especially nowadays. I mean, the last couple of years, plain and simple, Max, the balance sheets have been very tight. The economic situation has been very tight for the producers. We needed something to get this market excited, to get producers profitable. The wheat's now making a nice run, and it's getting to people in some pretty profitable levels. And hopefully that'll pull this corn market up toward that 420 to 440 level. But we're encouraging guys, hey, you know, look where you were just a few years ago, a few months back. Look where we were last fall going into August. We had corn trading below $3 in the cash market. So we're telling guys, when you have that opportunity to book profits, take some of that money and, take it off the table and book it.
A great elevator owner told me the other day, he said, man, my phone really heated up after that USDA report. I would imagine yours did, too.
Yes, it did. It finally got the producers excited, finally. I mean, we were really kind of in the doldrums. The corn market, for the most part, has been stuck in about a six-month range, just about a 15, 20-cent range. And, you know, when the market kind of shook off a bearish report and rallied, it kind of is getting people's attention. And we're getting levels, like I said, we've hit the $4 level. That kind of broke some corn free. I'm thinking, you know, 409 will break some more free. And I have a lot of producers that if we get up toward that 420, 440 zone, they are definitely, we're encouraging them to, buy puts or sell futures or get some of it marketed in the cash market.
Jim, thanks for sharing your comments with us. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Our thanks to Jim McCormick, along with Max, for a look at the agricultural market world. We'll continue with more here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, there's no question that weather is the main topic of conversation in agricultural commodities now that we're through the planted acreage report and the supply-demand report. Now it's weather, and it could get interesting. Sizzling temperatures in the Northern Plains spring wheat belt will spread this coming week into parts of the western Midwest, threatening prospects for corn yields as the crop enters its key pollination phase. Temperatures from Kansas through the Dakotas are expected to reach the mid-90s to the mid-100 degrees through next week, and above normal readings approaching 100 degrees could reach parts of Nebraska, Missouri, and Iowa in the first half of next week. One meteorologist, Don Keeney with MDA Weather Services, said, it's going to be pretty significant. It's been dry, and they are not going to get a whole lot of rain. That persistent heat in the northern plains, of course, has already scorched the spring wheat crops, sending Minneapolis Grain Exchange spring wheat futures to a four-year high above $8 a bushel this past week. And in North Dakota, the top spring wheat state, drought has also hit ranchers as hard as grain farmers. Hay prices have doubled. Grazing land becomes scarce. Cattlemen sending their cattle to market because they don't have the forage or the feed. Western Corn Belt states such as Iowa and Nebraska, that's the number one and number three U.S. corn producers, have escaped major weather stress so far, and the Department of Agriculture this week rated 78% of Iowa's corn and 75% of Nebraska's crop in good to excellent condition. So we probably see some more strength in the grain market this week, and it'll be based on weather. The one thing I've learned over my 50 years of covering the grain market is weather markets will go down as quickly as they go up if you get a good drop of rain. Something else, though, that U.S. producers might be concerned about. For years now, we've been challenged in the world soybean market by South America. Well, now we may be challenged by corn from South America. U.S. corn export sales dropped to a more than three-year low last week. That's according to U.S. government data released today. Why? Rising competition from massive harvests in Brazil and Argentina that is slowing down demand from the world's top exporter. Sales slump came even as corn prices dropped to a seven-week low during the reporting period. But as we look at some of the bookings, importers booked a net 140,275 tons of corn for shipment by the end of August in the week ending June 29th. That is the lowest figure yet for the 2016-17 marketing year. Combined sales, including 74,500 tons booked for shipment in the upcoming marketing year, were the lowest since June of 2014, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The NAFTA story continues to hold headlines as President Trump met with the President of Mexico at that G20 summit meeting in Hamburg, Germany today. He came out of that meeting with the President of Mexico hailing progress on trade. For the first time since becoming president, Trump met Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto, whose foreign minister, Luis Videgaray, said he expected talks on renegotiating NAFTA to start on August 16th, the earliest possible date. "We're negotiating NAFTA and some other things with Mexico," said the president, "and we'll see how it all turns out, but I think that we've made very good progress." In response to a shouted question from a reporter about whether he still wants Mexico to pay for the border wall, which aims to keep out illegal immigrants, President Trump said, "Absolutely." Well, where do we start the prices next week here on the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange? Looking at wheat, July wheat ended today at 515 and a quarter. That's where we'll start Monday. July corn ended at 382 and a quarter, but December corn ended at 404 and three quarters. And July soybeans will start the week at $9.96 a bushel, but the rest of the soybean months are above the $10 mark. New crop November at $10.15.5. And cattle and hog futures, the nearby hog contract will start the week at 91.72 a hundredweight. Live cattle, $114.77. And August feeder cattle, $145.02. That's our time for this week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.